All right, welcome back. Who's talking? Hobbo, Frank Maloney, Chris Sill in the house with our producer-engineer, Jesse. We thank Barry Koval for taking a few minutes to join us. We still expect to be joined momentarily by Chris Wright, the Sabre executive editor. As we've probably said before, Chris coaches the Western Albemarle women's team, the high school girls out there at Western Albemarle, and I think maybe his practice is running a minute or two late. But in the meantime, we'll talk about some of the comments that Tony Bennett made in his teleconference today at 1 o'clock as he sort of breaks down the team and assesses where they are.
Today, this is based upon a report that Chris Wright provided to us. Tony Bennett commented today that Akil's start and stats have been down. He's had to play as many minutes as he could handle last year with Darion and Toby out, Darion Atkins, that is. So he played a lot of minutes and really was lucky he didn't have leg injuries. He's healthy again after breaking a bone in his hand, and people aren't talking about that enough. I think Akil, watching him this year, he's not looking to shoot a lot because he's not confident with his left hand. He likes to fake guys both ways and then make his move. He can only fake and go one way right now, and that's his right hand. So Tony also commented that handling this long break for exams can take its toll on the kids. It's challenging here at Virginia. He commented that the San Antonio Spurs had a long break before they played the Heat, and then he heard that they practiced every other day during that time off. And they adjust a little bit, and we've gone off and done the same thing. That way we don't get too rusty.
I noticed one thing he said in there was about foul shooting, that one of their objectives this year was to get to the line more. And he kind of jokingly said he should have made the objective to not only get to the line but make the free throws when they got there, because that's been one of the problems so far this year.
That was his tongue-in-cheek. He also commented that, the more they get there, the more they'll be comfortable being there and playing so many more players. Obviously, they're shuttling in and out of the lineup, so that is an effect.
We do have Chris on the line now, Chris Wright of the Sabre joining us. Chris, we're glad we caught up with you. We were just sort of reviewing some of those comments that Tony made in his teleconference today or press conference. Did you have any additional comments on some of the key points you thought he made today?
I think the biggest one to me was that there's better basketball out there for this group. He kept circling back to that on a variety of questions. I think you were just talking about, multiple rotations, making more free throws, that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. It seemed like on virtually every question he answered, he circled back and said, I just feel like there's something better for us out there. I think we can be better than we've been. We've been okay in stretches, but we can be better for longer stretches. Everything circled back to that theme today, I thought.
Did he make any particular assessment as to why he feels they haven't reached maybe their peak level yet?
I think the biggest thing is turnovers, and he mentioned that on probably three or four answers today. There were like 9 or 10 questions on a 15-minute teleconference. Three or four of them, he circled back to talk about turnovers within his answer. So that's a big part of it. If you look at where they are right now, more turnovers than assists, their turnover percentage, and all that means is the percent of possessions you have a turnover on is the highest it's been since the end of the Dave Lato era. So the highest it's been in the Tony Bennett era period. I think it's around 21-22%. So in other words, they're turning the ball over once out of every 5 possessions. That's really high in general. It's extremely high for a Tony Bennett team. And I think that's really hurting a lot of their rhythm, a lot of their offense. I think it trickles over to the defense at times as well.
Well, part of that has got to be due to the fact that Brogdon is back after a year off. They've brought in Gill, who had a year off, so he's rusty. You've got a new point guard in London Perantes, who's a rookie. It's going to take time for those guys to get used to each other, right?
Yeah, that's a big part of it. And the rotation is deeper than it's been here. Guys more in the mid-20s range instead of guys in the high 20s to low 30s range in terms of minutes. I think part of it is what you said, a little bit of rust with Malcolm Brogdon. He didn't really turn the ball over back as a freshman the way he is now. I think the post a little bit. Anthony Gill, like you said, had a year off. Remember, Akil Mitchell broke a bone in his hand back during the summer. So he had a bunch of months off where he wasn't using both hands. So I think there's just a lot of little trickle-down things that are adding up to multiple turnovers. Hopefully those things get cleaned up. They traditionally have after the break, after this exam break. So we'll see if tradition holds or not.
You know, the other thing that maybe some of us didn't give Jontel Evans as much credit as he was due, a lot of us, you know, we looked at his deficiencies on the offensive end, but he certainly played great defense, particularly on ball defense against the other team's point guard, which is critical, and he took care of the ball and did a great job distributing the basketball on the offensive end.
Yeah, he had a few games here and there where something would sneak up, but for the most part, he was pretty solid with the basketball, getting the ball where it needed to go to initiate things. He certainly was good at on-ball defense. I dove into that a little bit last week in an article that the numbers look the same on defense, the statistics do, other than blocks per game. And I think the reason that blocks per game is down, and I think a reason that Virginia's giving up more direct drives to the basket, in other words, a straight path where the dribbler doesn't have to change direction, I think the reason they're giving up more of those is because the other team is able to start their offense a little bit closer to the basket because Jontel Evans is not here. So that limits and reduces the amount of time that the help defenders have to react. And I think that influences things like straight line drives, blocks per game. And that's something that they'll continue to try to address. One way they've done it is move Justin Anderson over and have him guard the point guard. But that's not ideal because his blocks per game are down almost a half a block per game from last year, simply because he's having to play on-ball defense more than help-side defense.
What about Joe Harris? When are we going to see Joe Harris back to the way he performed last year against Duke?
Yeah, Joe Harris is a fascinating case to me, and one of Coach Bennett's answers today kind of sounded like he was thinking the same thing. Joe plays so hard, and he tries to do everything so well all the time, that I think when things aren't going well, and Coach Bennett mentioned this a little bit, that frustration bubbles up for him because he wants to do so well for his team. So I think if he can kind of stay off of that emotional roller coaster a little bit and take a little bit of pressure off of himself, that he doesn't have to be perfect at everything every single game, I think he would be better in those times that you see him dip. And I think that might be what's going on at the free throw line a little bit. He feels so much that he has to do to help his team win, that I think he puts undue pressure on things like a free throw in the first 10 minutes of the game or whatever. He just needs to relax and trust his skills. The flip side of that, though, is they do need Joe Harris to be good. They do need the Joe Harris from the Duke game. And it's kind of fascinating. If you look at his three-point shooting percentage, I think is where this shows up. And about half the games, he's shooting over 80% from three-point range, which is insane. But the other half, he's shooting less than 20%. So it's a real feast or famine thing going on with his shooting right now. So I think if the first couple goes in, he feeds off of it. And I think if the first couple don't, he also feeds off of that. If he can find some sort of middle ground, I think he'll be better and more consistent more of the time.
Chris, I noticed, based on the ACC stats that came out today, long rebounds have contributed to Malcolm Brogdon breaking into the top 10 in the ACC. Currently, he's averaging 4.9 rebounds a game. Also, offensive rebounds, Toby is tied for fifth in the conference, averaging 2.7. And assist-to-turnover ratio, London Perantes is at 2.67. Pretty certain they'd rather see him closer to 4.0 in that range. But interestingly enough, Joe Harris and Akil Mitchell are not in the top 20 in scoring, and you would think that those two players would be at or near that level, wouldn't you?
Yeah, I mean, based on what they did last year, there's a lot more balance on this team. So there are going to be nights where those guys don't have to score and they won't score. But, yeah, you would think at least one of them would be carrying a top 20 type of load. So that's a little bit surprising. But the London Perantes number is something I looked at last week. His assist-to-turnover ratio is currently higher than anyone I could find in the VirginiaSports.com archives, which went back to like 2002. So higher than Singletary, higher than Evans, higher than Zaglinski, higher than J.R. Reynolds. That assist-to-turnover ratio is the best that I could find in the archives. Now, it's possible.
Well, see, the reason there, you didn't go back to Hobo's era. See, then
they don't go back that far.
Hobo, hold on the stats.
I think I had one assist during my career.
Well, maybe so, but it says here that you must have at least a minimum of 3.0 assists per game.
Per game,
So there's no chance that you could have qualified.
I only made three passes in 3 years.
Well, you said Barry Parkhill was the same way.
Well, Chris, how about the ACC? Interesting that two of the additions, Pitt and Syracuse, are 20-0 between them thus far. So Syracuse looks like they're certainly going to be the real deal this year.
Yes, same old, right? Pittsburgh struggled a little bit last year, but Dixon has had them going for years. They've been a number one seed a couple times, if I remember correctly, in the tournament. And obviously Syracuse with Coach Boeheim is consistently good. So nothing too surprising there. Notre Dame's been up and down. That's a little bit surprising, I guess. But the ACC is going to be a battle. I don't care what their out-of-conference losses look like, what their out-of-conference wins look like. A lot of good coaches in this league and a lot of good preparation in this league. So when the time comes, I expect a whole lot of excruciating down-to-the-wire battles to test some Virginia fans' hearts, I suspect.
You know, it's interesting. Miami coming off an ACC championship is 5-5 and struggling mightily. Now, all those...
Well, they got wiped out.
They got wiped out by the NBA and just a trip.
Just graduation,
trip,
yeah. Well,
Duran Scott and...
Eligibility expiration.
Johnson.
Maybe not graduation. You never know.
That's what I said. I said attrition. That may be too much for you, Hobbo.
I don't know what attrition means. You know that.
The Johnson, the center, Duran Scott, the guard, and... Larkin, the speed buggy racer, they're all gone, aren't they?
Yeah, well, Larkin was the one guy that could have come back, but he opted to leave early.
And Boston College, which had a very young team last year that was coming on.
To me, that's the biggest surprise.
4-7.
I thought they were poised to have a breakout year this year, and maybe they're just off to a really, really slow start. We'll have to see what happens.
Well, they forgot how to play defense is what happened to Boston College. They are awful at defense, so they're trying to outscore people, and it's not working.
Well, let's talk about football recruiting, Chris. A bunch of players were on grounds this past weekend, and a bunch of players are up in the air right now. We know that Jamil Kamara, who's a stud and a half, he four-star, has not decided yet. He's a Virginia Beach kid. Daquan Lawrence decommitted from Wake, and now he's in the mix. UVA just offered this weekend Vincent Jackson and Trey Watson, two kids in Florida. And now all of a sudden, this young man up in Stafford, Virginia, Daniel Ezeguo, tough name, he did score three touchdowns versus Ocean Lakes this year, and all of a sudden everybody wants him. He's a wide receiver, 6'2", 205. Virginia's fighting for him. We know that Marcus Applefield declined Maryland, Purdue, and Virginia and selected Rutgers. Cornelius Floyd, a cornerback, is looking at Arkansas and UVA. And Melvin Kine from Gilman is looking at Maryland, Penn State, VPI, and Virginia. So all that going on, plus Darius Carter, who we talked about earlier in the show.
How many more do we expect to get commitments from?
Well, right now 13 commits, and Chris Horn says that Virginia could take as many as 17 or 18.
So another four or five.
Another four or five. Chris, have you heard any other news from your colleague?
No, I think you covered most of it. Big weekend for them. This was Kamara's last official visit before he'll announce. He's going to announce at the Army Bowl on January the 4th. And then obviously we talked about a couple guys that decommitted, one from Wake, one from Temple, who were here. Obviously, Andrew Brown played in the state championship game at Scott Stadium this weekend, so he was in Charlottesville this weekend. We know Corwin Cutler, the quarterback that already committed last year, that was at FUMA. He was here this weekend. He's good buddies with Kamara, so he was here on an unofficial visit, but he was here trying to get his buddy to come join him. So a big weekend for them. We'll see how it pays dividends or not over the next 6 weeks or so as we lead up to signing day.
Well, it's kind of a crazy period. We've got about a minute before we go to break, but you know, there's right now the contact period just ended. So from December 16th through January 15th is a dead period. There's no contact, no phone calls, no visits, no nothing, no texts.
It's called Christmas.
Yeah. Through the 15th, Hobbo. That's past Christmas. Contact period.
The 12 days of Christmas.
Yeah. Well, Hobbo, how did you get into radio? Contact period resumes coming up there on the 16th. But believe it or not, there's a quiet period that comes up February the 2nd, which is the 3 days prior to National Signing Day.
Well,
so,
that's Groundhog Day. So it's National Holiday.
Hobbo, we're going to have to get you back on your meds. Anyway, Chris, what do you make of Virginia's situation right now with all that?
Yeah, that's why this weekend was so big. You're going to have some guys that are going to make up their minds during the dead period. That's just how it goes. You know, some guys will drag it out and they'll wait till signing day. But now that everybody's senior season is over, now that they've done their visits, they've talked to the coaches, now they get a little dead period to talk it over with their parents, talk with their high school coaches, talk with whoever else is influencing their life and figure out what they want to do. And they get to do it without college people, recruiters, peppering them constantly with texts and calls and all that kind of stuff. So it's set up that way on purpose. Big weekend for Virginia for that very reason. And we'll see what guys decide to do, if people are still on board or not.
Very good. Well, Chris, we've got to jump to our last break before our last segment. And we want to thank you, as always, for joining us. And we'll be in touch in the weeks ahead.
And Merry Christmas to you and your family.
Excellent. Happy holidays to everyone.
Take care, Chris. All right, we're going to head to break. When we come back, Habbo is going to crack some more weird jokes. So stay with us, okay? This is Who's Talking.